So this is where we ended. This is the sitting place of Lord Chaitanya map, and here's the actual structure. And as you walk down the sets of steps to get to where the sitting place is, you see these nice murals depicting Lord Chaitanya's Leela. Then we go inside. Of course, originally, and even not so many, just a few years ago, there wasn't a upper structure. It was just a sitting place. But it's been fixed up nicely so people can sit in the shade. And out the window, you see Shyamakund. And over here in this other direction, also Shyamakund and these different murals. Krishna Leela and Gaura Leela. And next we're going to see, oh, right here. This is a very nice place. It's a platform where Radha and Krishna would sometimes sit together and enjoy pastimes where they would sometimes play chess. And other activities. So that little place extending into Radha Kunda's or Shyamakunda's their sitting place. And directly across the street there's a Lakshmi Narayana temple. I don't know much about the place. There's Lakshmi Narayan deity, a temple for them. There's where Lord Chaitanya sat. The sitting place of Radha and Krishna was here. The Lakshmi Narayan temple here is down a little distance, not far, is the Radha Madan Mohan temple. This is what you see as you walk in from the gate. Over here is where Lord Chaitanya, where Sanatana Goswami would sit and chant, his bhajan place, one of a number of them. And then the temple, we'll see the deities of Madan Mohan. Here's where he would rest. Here's the deities, Madan Mohan deities, little area. And these are the Madan Mohan deities that you'll find in Jaipur. And I believe I have a photo, in Karoli. So the Madan Mohan deities of Sanatana Goswami ended up in Karoli. And that's a long discussion. Actually, this is in Jaipur, and this is in Karoli. Yeah. So it's a long narration. Should I describe about the deity of Madan Mohan, or should I describe about Sanatana Goswami? What would you like to hear? Both. Better not give you a third option because you'll say all three. Well, the deity of Madan Mohan, which of course, they don't allow photographs, so this is a painting. I believe it's a painting. After Krishna left and finished his pastimes, the Pandavas left and followed him. But before Yudhisthira left, he placed as the king Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit was the grandson of the Pandavas, specifically the grandson of Arjuna. And one of the first things that Maharaj Pariksit did was he established the great-grandson of Krishna as the king of Mathura. So, one of Krishna's queens was Rukmini, and one of their 10 sons was Pradyumna. One of Pradyumna's sons was Aniruddha, and one of Aniruddha's sons was Krishna, Vajranab. Vajranab then became the king of Mathura under Maharaj Pariksit, and Vajranab established a number of deities. We discussed this actually a little bit. Hare Krishna. We discussed this a little bit when we were speaking about the Govindaji deity. Remember? So, three principal deities, Madan Mohan, Govindaji, and Gopinath. And those three principal deities are the presiding deities of the three divisions of the subject matter of the Vedas. Madan Mohan presides over Sambandhagyan, the knowledge of the relationship of all things with their source of emanation, Krishna. And he presides over this establishing of one's relationship through that knowledge. A very merciful deity. And over the generations and decades and centuries, the deity became lost. All three of the deities became lost. So before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, Advaita Acharya of the Panchatattva, he came to Vrindavan. And where he stayed in Vrindavan was a place called Advaita Vat. There's a banyan tree there. And beneath the banyan tree, he just happened to find the Madan Mohan deity, which is not a small deity. The deity, all three of the deities are quite large. So he found the Madan Mohan deity and he began worshipping the Madan Mohan deity. And after some time, he wanted to return to Shantipur. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was due to appear. So before he left, he entrusted the worship of Madan Mohan to a Brahmin who lived in Mathura named Purushottam Chobe. Nice Brahmana family. And for years and years and years, he worshipped Madan Mohan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later then gave Rupa Goswami the service, Sanrupa and Sanatan, the service of writing books and establishing places of Krishna's pastimes, as he had established Radhakund and Shamakund, as he had done they should do. That was his service. So Sanatan Goswami found Madan Mohan in the following way. It's a very surprising description. Madan Mohan is very playful and very personal and very he likes reciprocating with his devotees. So one day Sanatan Goswami, he was doing Madhukari in Mathura. First he had gone from Vrindavan, where he was staying up on top of a hill, where now the Madan Mohan temple is, and he walked 16 miles to get to Govardhan Hill, 14 miles around Govardhan Hill, and then some similar number of miles to go to Mathura to do Madhukari, and he had been fasting the whole day. And in the late afternoon time, he saw a bunch of children playing with a ball in a field. And one of the children was particularly all attractive. And as he watched the children playing, he came to realize that all-attractive child was Krishna. So he watched the children as they were playing, and then they returned home. And they returned, one of the boys was Purushottam Chobe's son, and the other was Madan Mohan, who was playing with the children just like a little boy. So he went to Purushottam Chobe and said, you know, this, you can't let Madan Mohan go out and play with your son. I know it's unusual for a deity to do such a thing, but it's not proper. He's not just a friend of your son's, he's the Supreme Lord. You can't do that. Purushottam Chobi and his wife were very surprised to hear this from Sanatan Goswami, but they respected him. And so they did what he said. And Sanatan Goswami was very attracted, of course, to Madan Mohan, naturally. And so he would regularly go to Purushottam Chobe's home, and one time he went in the morning and he saw his wife cooking, with one hand stirring a cooking pot and the other hand brushing her teeth. And he scolded her and said, you can't cook while you're unclean, you haven't bathed, you're brushing your teeth and stirring, you can't do this. And she explained, well, I do this so that, because I get up late and the children are hungry. And he said, but you can't do this. So she stopped under his instruction. And then continuing to visit the children, including Madan Mohan, was complaining, you know, we're hungry and she's not giving us our food on time. So he told his wife, you go ahead and do what you want to do. And that night, the next day when he went, Madan Mohan spoke and said, Purushottam Chobe, yes, Purushottam Chobe said, Madan Mohan appeared to me in a dream and said he wants to be worshipped by you, so you please take him. And I'll feel great separation. But Sanatan Goswami then said, well, how can I worship him? I don't even have a place to stay. I don't have anything to offer him. And then Madan Mohan spoke. All of the biographies say these same things. Madan Mohan spoke and said, that's okay. You eat something. And whatever that something is that you eat, just offer that to me first. They said, but I don't have nice things, and here Purushottam Chobe can offer you nice things. He's a householder. I'm a mendicant. So, no, whatever you offer, it's okay. So he agreed. He took the deity home, but home means on this hill where he stayed. The hill is Dwadasya Aditya Tila. It's one of the highest places in all of Vrindavan. And that's where he was staying, up on top of that hill. So he didn't have anything, so he made an arrangement. He hung the deity from a tree, like a little rope strap, and the deity was resting on that rope strap, and he was just raised but hanging from a tree. And each day when he would do Madhukari, he would take whatever he got and offer it to Madan Mohan. But commonly in Vrindavan, wheat, because it's in the winter especially, it's cold, and wheat makes heat, so people like wheat. In Bengal they like rice. In South India they like rice, but in Vrindavan they like wheat. So he would mix the wheat flour with water and make balls and put the balls into a fire. And when the fire cooked, they call it bhati, he would break off the burned black part, and then that was his meal. So he offered the bhati to Madan Mohan, and then after it was offered, that was his meal. Some time passed, and one day Madan Mohan said, this is all right, but can you put a little salt in the bhati? And Sanatan Goswami said, I don't have little salt. I don't have anything. If you want, I'll take you back to Purushottam Chobe. He has nice things. No, I'll accept. It's okay. Now the next day, several boats were traveling from Delhi to Agra carrying salt. And forget the name of the person who was the captain of the ship in charge of that, but the boats got stuck on a sand dune sticking out into the Yamuna River. So he tried everything and the boats wouldn't move. Someone said, there's a sadhu up on that hill, maybe he can help you, give you his blessing and your boats will be all right. So he went, and he just so happened, because he was a salt merchant, he had a little packet of salt in his pocket. And he came to Sanatan Goswami and said, everyone said you're a saintly person, and if you were very kind, you could give your blessing and something good will happen. So Sanatan Goswami gestured to his deity. He said, he's the Supreme Lord, if you just pray to him and something nice can happen. So he said, oh, I wanted to give you something, but I forgot, I left the boat in such anxiety, all I have is some salt. And so when he went back, miraculously, the boats were freed, and he went and made a sail in Agra, made lots of money, and his mind was on Madan Mohan and Sanatan Goswami, because they're so pure and saintly, Sanatan Goswami. So he became inspired to go back and see him, and offered the entire, not just profit, but everything that he received from the sale of the salt to Sanatan Goswami, who said, I'm a mendicant, I don't need anything. But my deity, you could make a temple for my deity. So he agreed, and he made a very tall, beautiful red sandstone temple for Madan Mohan, which is still there. In fact, it's one of the landmarks of all of Vrindavan, because it's tall and it's up on a hill, so you can see it practically from any direction. And maybe you remember this when we discussed about Govindaji, but Purushottam Jena, the son of the king of Orissa, because he, Purushottam, had Lord Chaitanya's association when Lord Chaitanya was staying in Puri. So he wanted to do some service for both Govindaji and Madan Mohan. So he came up with the idea of creating Radharani to stand by the side of both Madan Mohan and Govindaji. So he made that arrangement, a big procession, formal royal elephant procession, to bring the two Radharanis from Puri all the way to Vrindavan. And the date for the installation was set, and that evening, on the date of the installation, the pujari of Madan Mohan had a dream in which now I can't remember if it was Madan Mohan said or Radharani said, but Radharani said, actually, I'm not Radharani, I'm Lalita, and I belong by the side of Madan Mohan. So one of us is Radharani, but I'm Lalita. So when you do the installation, that should be the arrangement. Lalita should be by the side of Madan Mohan. And then Madan Mohan spoke and said, she's right. And he woke up. So because he was a very respected pujari, one who was to do the installation for both Radharanis, he told everybody what his dream was. And so the installation went on, and Radha and Lalita were placed by the side of Madan Mohan, leaving Govindaji without Radharani. So that other Radharani description that I gave you, she then came from Puri and placed by the side of Govindaji. A very famous, there's many famous exchanges between Sanatan Goswami and Madan Mohan. One time, it was rainy in Vrindavan, so Sanatan Goswami, he was staying down at the bottom of the hill. This is before the temple was built. And he stayed in a little place, a little thatched place. And in the midst of the storm, he heard a rattling on the door. And he was wondering, who's at the door at this stormy night? And he went to the door, and it was Madan Mohan, who said, I'm hungry. You haven't fed me today. And Sanatan said, but it's a storm. He said, but that doesn't mean I'm not hungry. Make some arrangements. Bring me something to eat. So Sanatan Goswami left and went in the middle of the rain and went to where the deity was and made an offering to him. Then the deity will go back. This is the deity of Madan Mohan, I believe, in Jaipur. So, due to threat of military invasion, the number of the deities, the principal deities of Vrindavan were taken out of Vrindavan to Jaipur for safety. And for years, the king of Jaipur worshipped them. Some generations passed, and the king had a daughter, a princess, and the king of Karoli had a son. So the king of Karoli got this inspired idea, it would be nice if my son could marry the king of Jaipur's daughter. It would make a nice alliance. So he sent a messenger to the king of Jaipur and made this marriage proposal. And the king considered this very qualified son, and he thought it was a nice arrangement, so he spoke to his daughter, and his daughter said, I can accept this marriage proposal, but I have just one condition. I'm very attached to Madan Mohan, so when I marry and go to Karoli, I'd like to take Madan Mohan with me. So the king said, no way, marriage is off. Madan Mohan isn't leaving. I'm attached to Madan Mohan too. So that night, Madan Mohan appeared in his dream and said, I want to go to Karoli. I want to be worshipped in Karoli. Please make the arrangement. So the king was amazed. And the marriage of the girl took place in Jaipur, and in a royal ceremony, Madan Mohan was transferred from Jaipur to Karoli, where today Madan Mohan is worshipped. Now, when you go to the Madan Mohan temple in Karoli, first of all, they built a new temple for him. But several generations before, there was a king of Karoli named Gopal. And in the course of a military battle, he defeated another king, and the other king was worshipping this deity of Gopal, Radha Gopal, and so he brought the deity back to Karoli, and that became the family deity, Radha Gopal. And for generations they were worshipping Radha Gopal. Now comes the son, who's married to the princess of Jaipur, and here comes Madan Mohan. So what to do? Because Madan Mohan wanted to come. Okay. So they decided they would build a special temple, a new temple, and it's up on a hill, and up, 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 up. It's like the center of the city. And when you see the altar, on the left-hand side is Radha Gopal. And then the central altar is Madan Mohan. And there, the pujaris explained like this: we observe the practice that Madan Mohan is the guest. And Radha Gopal is the family deity. So we take all the offerings, pass them before Radha Gopal. We don't offer them, we place them before Radha Mohan, Radha Madan Mohan, and make the offering. And then similarly make an offering to Radha Gopal. So he's like the central deity. And on two occasions when I was there, the king of Karoli came to observe the aarti. And he came not in royal attire, but in very simple kadi and humble, and stood with folded hands up, you know, on top where the pujaris are. But just observing the aarti ceremony of the deity, which is filled with enthusiasm and, you know, banging and singing and calling out, and lots of enthusiasm and devotion for Madan Mohan. It is said that one of the kings of Karoli was in anxiety when there was some invasion coming from a Marwari army, and they were very, very strong and powerful, and he was retreating and he didn't know what to do, so he went to the temple and prayed to Madan Mohan, and suddenly all the cannons around the palace fired and, you know, made damage to the invading army, and they ran and fled. But he didn't do anything. So Madan Mohan made some arrangement like that. So a very amazing, very personable deity, very approachable. Although, to have darshan, you're down on the floor, and then there's an altar, and then there's like a marble platform. It's deep, and there's fences all around, and then further back, and then receded, and up on another throne. You're physically not close to him, like this picture is showing in Jaipur. But His mercy is very palpable, and the devotion of the devotees there, many hundreds of people come every aarti, and so there's this quiet time in between. There's many brahmanas seated on the floor reading from the scriptures softly, and then some people come and they do some puja for them and this and that, and some other people over there doing some singing some traditional songs, and some other ladies over there singing their songs, and in the back there's a group of men that they've got their favorite kirtan. It's this cacophony of sound, of just expressions of devotion. And then when it's aarti time, as it gets approaching aarti time, all the singing gets louder and people get up and start dancing and calling, and hundreds of people. It's just amazing. Just amazing how much natural devotion there is for Madan Mohan. So if you have the opportunity to visit Karoli, please go there. Okay. Now we're going to take a look at the Sangam area. This is the dividing wall or structure between Shyamakund and Radhakund. And there's always some happy Brijvasis ready to help you lighten your pockets of rupees and make some offering to them or for the worship that they do. And of course, many devotees from all different descriptions bathing in Radhakund and Shyamakund, especially Radhakund. And it's a meeting place where Radha and Krishna would sit together and enjoy their pastimes, like that other sitting place that we saw. But it's because it's connecting between Radhakund, Shyamakund, it has that special dimension. Different artists depicting the mood at that Sangam. On that Sangam is Bunki Bihari, the same Bunki Bihari as in Vrindavan town, and so the same pujaris, they worship Bunki Vihari at that spot. And now we're going back out along the Parikrama path, and there is a very large set of Gornatai deities. And this is a typical scene that you see, that little passage that singing was Prabhupada singing Sad Goswami Astakam, where it is said that the Goswamis, Sankhya, Porvaka, Nama, Gananati V, they would chant prescribed number of rounds or japa, and they would perform dandavats certain number of times every day. Specifically, Raghunath Das had that qualification, or that vrata. Here's Prabhupada speaking. Raghunath Das Goswami showed how to live at Radhakund. He was circumambulating Radhakund, falling down, making a mark. That is Radhakund Vasi. Not only counted holy names, but offering obeisances so many hundred times in every day. He, so much vairagya he showed, he can take bath in Radhakund. First of all, do this, like Raghunath Das Goswami. So some discussion apparently about, is it okay to bathe in Radhakund? I wasn't there, but I was told the first time in 1972, when Prabhupada took devotees to Vrindavan, one of the places he took them to was Radhakund, and they asked, can they bathe in Radhakund? It's so sacred. And Prabhupada said yes. And being not very cultured and trained in these matters, they put on their gumshoes and jumped in the Radhakund and started splashing around like it was a pool. And Prabhupada became very upset, said, get out. And then he issued an order, no more bathing in Radhakund. And that held for about 3 years. He was like very unhappy. He said, this is sacred. Radhakund is not different than Radharani. How can you do like this? So then later he modified and said, only with the permission of the spiritual master, then you can bathe in Radhakund. And here he's saying, if you can perform like Raghunath Das Goswami, do that first. So Raghunath Das had this, just as you see here, pilgrims doing. He would perform Dandavats Parikrama, or on a daily basis, he would pay his obeisances so many times, something like 100 times to Vaishnavas, and 100 times before deities. And he just continued doing that, and continued doing that, and continued doing that. Even he was on the topmost platform, he would continue doing like that. So this is, even there's shops and people milling about, it's just pilgrims do this all throughout Govardhan and in the Radhakund area. This is Nityananda Prabhu's sitting place, where the deities of Madhu Pandit, of the worshipper of Radha Gopinath, would sometimes reside. This is the deity of Gopinath that's worshipped at Radhakund. This is a very interesting garment of Madhu Pandit. He was very fond of Tulsi, so he made a shawl or a hat and a cape made of Tulsi beads sewn together. This photograph is taken in Jaipur. But when we went there this time, it's not there anymore. I don't know what happened. Somebody maybe stole it or something. Huh? What? Okay. When we went, it wasn't there. You saw it when? at the temple of Radha Gopinath at Radha Kund, Lord Nityananda would sit in the courtyard. Of course, this is before Madhu Pandit's time. He would sit in that courtyard and where he would do his chanting. Now, Lord Nityananda, he was Lord Chaitanya's elder brother in a transcendental sense, but he was born in an entirely different family, in an entirely different place, in Ekachakra. He was 12 and a half years older than Lord Chaitanya. And when Lord Chaitanya was soon to be born, on the pretext of going with a sannyasi as his assistant, he left Ekachakra and traveled to holy places throughout all of India. And then at the end of that tour, he stayed for a number of years in Vrindavan, and one of the places he stayed was here, extensively at Radha Kund. Now, remember, this is before Lord Chaitanya came to Vrindavan, and when Lord Chaitanya came to Vrindavan, he discovered Radha Kund and Shyama Kund. We heard that yesterday evening. But when Lord Nityananda came, he was also omniscient and knew what the place was, and so he sat here and performed his chanting. Imli Tal, which is in Vrindavan town, is another place where he would go. In fact, Shingaravat, which is very near Imli Tal, we visited there, we spoke about it, is another place where Lord Nityananda stayed extensively. And those from the seminal line of Lord Nityananda, Virabhadra was his son, and in his line is called Nityananda Vamsa, seminal line from Lord Nityananda. They do the worship there and at Shingaravat. Anyway, so Lord Nityananda stayed for some time in this location. And it looks like we're done. This is a little appreciation of the six Goswamis who resided. Each one of them took up their residence in Vrindavan directly under Lord Chaitanya's order, and their main service was writing books, establishing places of pilgrimage of Lord Chaitanya's, of Lord Krishna's pastimes, and instructing those who came, giving their association to those who came to further the message and the mission of Lord Chaitanya. So this is a very nice aerial picture. There's Radha Kund, here's Shyama Kund, there's the Sangam, there's the sitting place of Mother Janava. This courtyard here is the backside of the Madan Mohan Temple. Oh, I forgot to narrate one very nice pastime that took place there. You remember the pilu tree? There's the pilu tree. There's the bhima tree. And these places right here, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's bhajan kutir, Raghunath Das Goswami's bhajan kutir, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami's bhajan kutir. The three samadhi area is just back here. You have to, so it's all very narrow and difficult to navigate. This is going down this way is where the Arjun tree is found, and then these other temples that we visited. So now you get your bearings a little bit. From this location right here, the Govinda temple where Rupa Goswami stayed is over in this area, like where that pinkish building is, like in that area. He was busily engaged in writing transcendental pastimes. of Krishna, not imaginative ones, but what he had experience of and realizations of. And because he had this relationship with his elder brother of seeing him as his spiritual master, Shiksha Guru, he had everything that he wrote examined by Sanatan Goswami. So one day, he came from this side over here, came around just like we did our parikrama, over to the Radha Madan Mohan temple to see his elder brother Sanatan Goswami. And he presented the manuscript to him that he had been working on for his approval. And Sanatan Goswami wanted to hear what he had written, so he was reading aloud, and there was a particular passage that he felt very uncomfortable with. He didn't say anything, but the passage was Radharani and some gopis were playing together, and Rupa Goswami had described Radharani as having a long braid down her back, looking like a snake. And he thought, this isn't a nice metaphor, calling Radharani's braid like a snake. But he didn't say anything, he just was meditating on that idea. So he came along this way to take his bath midday at Shamakund. And on the other side of this Manasapavan Ghat, he saw some young village girls playing. They were playing with a ball and, you know, making noises like girls will make. And then one of them turned and started walking away. And from where he was standing here, it looked like there was a snake climbing up her back. So he called out loudly, "Look out, watch out." However you say it in local language. "There's a snake climbing up her back." And the girl turned, smiled, and took her braid like this, and then suddenly disappeared. So Sanatan Goswami could understand that was Radharani. And she wanted Sanatan Goswami to know, it's all right, that Rupa Goswami had described my braid looking like a snake moving that way. So the next day, Rupa Goswami came to ask Sanatan Goswami, "Did you read the manuscript? Did you have time? And what were your thoughts?" He said, "Oh, it's very nice. I especially like the part about how you described her braid. Very nice." So it's a transcendental place. I mean, the pastimes have their potencies in them, just hearing them and narrating them. And because there's time, as I said yesterday, because this is our visit to Radhakund Shamakund is now complete, I was thinking to just narrate some of the descriptions given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur of pastimes of Radha and Krishna that are very unique. Now, the pastimes that I thought to describe, they're not pastimes that took place here at Radhakund Shamakund. The ones that I have described to you have. But they take place in Yavat, mostly, because they're in relation to Radharani and her so-called marriage with her so-called husband, Abhimanyu. I say so-called because our acharyas say that, because there's only one person in Radharani's life, and that's Krishna. But for sake of Leela, there's this other arrangement. If you're familiar with, I'm sure you're familiar with, the pastime of Brahma stealing the calves and the cowherd boys and put them in caves. And when he came back to see what Krishna would do when the calves and the cowherd boys were gone, he saw all the calves and the cowherd boys. So then he was bewildered. So he went back and looked in the cave, and they were in the cave. Then he came back to look, and he saw forms of Narayan for each one of the calves and each one of the cowherd boys. In each one of those forms of Narayan were surrounded by the personified Vedas and great devas, and they were singing his glories and all of that. So during that time, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, that time that Brahma went back and forth, one whole year had passed on earthly time, because Brahma's time is different and earthly time is different. Remember, relative time, right? So one whole year had passed, and during that one whole year, the identical forms of the calves and the cowherd boys were mixing with the cows and their mothers and fathers. And it was a lila designed by Krishna to reciprocate with the parents and with the cows, to have Krishna as their son or Krishna as their calf. So to reciprocate with that loving desire, Krishna made this arrangement. So when the cowherd boys went back to spend the evening with their parents, if you can imagine this, they didn't even recognize it wasn't their son. They were like perfect copies. Yeah, their sound of their voice and their buffalo horns and all their paraphernalia and their clothing, and everything was perfect. Except for one difference: their affection for Krishna as their son became like their affection for Krishna as for Krishna. Because in Vrindavan, something you don't find anywhere, where parents may have a liking for some other children besides their own children, in Vrindavan, their affection for Krishna is greater even than for their own children, because they're pure devotees. So they have that special affection for Krishna. So, because to fulfill that desire that Krishna could become their son, Krishna became their son. So in one year they associated like that. And the calves associated with the cows to fulfill their desire in the same way. So there's a description where Krishna got a bright idea, and he proposed to Nanda Maharaj, "I understand it's a very auspicious time, and as you know, in our culture, boys and girls are married very early in their life. I think at this auspicious time, it would be a wonderful idea to marry all the cowherd boys to all the cowherd girls." So Nanda Maharaj thought, "This is a wonderful idea. Let me ask Purnamasi." And Purnamasi said, "Oh, very wonderful idea. Let's make the arrangement right away." So all the cowherd boys, including Abhimanyu, married cowherd girls. And not that they lived together as husband and wife, but the system was, on birthdays the girls would bring the boy some gift, something nice, something to eat, and the boy would go, "Oh, she's very good. She makes nice things." And that way the boy-girl attachment would form, and when they were mature, they would live together. But they knew who their husband and who their wife was. So Abhimanyu was married to Radharani. That's one description. So when this 1 year had passed, which was actually one short period, a few moments in Brahma's time, all the cowherd boys were again seated with Krishna, and they said, "Oh, Krishna, you're so attached to us, you can't stay away from us at all. Sit down and finish your lunch." By yoga maya, they were oblivious to what had happened, and they were oblivious to any arrangement of Krishna to have this interaction with Lord Brahma and so forth. So they just carried on, but they were informed by the parents that they were married to whoever they were married to, and when time passed and they lived with their wives. Now Krishna left Vrindavan, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Akura took Krishna from Vrindavan when he was 10 years and 4 months. So the cowherd boys weren't living with their cowherd girls yet. And in any case, Abhimanyu was therefore called the so-called husband of Radharani. And repeatedly our acharyas say things like, he's a manifestation of Krishna's shadow, and that Abhimanyu never even so much as touched Radharani. He stayed in a separate part of the house of his mother. There's no mention of father, but his mother was named Katila, and mother's name Jatila, and sister's name is Katila. So there's many pastimes where Jatila and Katila and Abhimanyu are involved in pastimes with Krishna. And if you can remember that example of the shortest distance between two points is a straight line, none of these leelas move in a straight line. They're all very mysterious. So I'm going to describe Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's depiction of two of these Radha and Krishna pastimes. So one of them is where Srimati Radharani had gotten permission from her mother-in-law and her husband that during the month of Magh, in the cold January-February month, she had a particular vrata to go to the river Jamuna, and before the sun would rise, she would take her morning cold bath, because it was considered auspicious to do like that, austere, and bathe in the river Jamuna. So off she went early in the morning, before the sun would come up, and with her girlfriends, they would go to the Jamuna to take their bath. But Katila became suspicious. Why is Radharani going so early in the morning, so religiously, so faithfully, to the river Jamuna? It's so cold. I think there's something up. I think that she's meeting with Krishna. So she mentioned like that to her mother. And mother said, why don't you go to Nandagram? This is a very intelligent thought that you have. Why don't you go to Nandagram and find out what's up with Nanda Nandana? So she went. Like, so it's the plot thickens. She went to Nandagram and very innocently said, oh, they said, Katila, how nice to see you here so early in the morning. Is there some service that we can do for you? And she said, well, no, I just came to pay my respects to Nanda Maharaj and to his nice son, Nanda Nandana. How are they doing? Oh, Nanda Nandana is doing a special vow, a special vrata, the whole month of Magh. He's going very early in the morning to take his bath in the river Jamuna. Oh, he is he? Okay. So she's now, her suspicion was confirmed as far as she's concerned. They're up to some mischief. But to find somebody at the river Jamuna, it's not easy because it's a long river. So she tried her best to follow Krishna's footprints. She's meditating on, like a kura, but with a different mood. She's meditating on Krishna's footprints in the soft sand of Vrindavan and followed his footprints. Meanwhile, Radha and Krishna were with a number of the gopis, are enjoying very nice pastimes by the side of River Jamuna in one grove. And Radharani has one of her messengers, or several of her messengers, out looking to see if there's going to be any interruption or disturbance. And one of those messengers saw Katila with a big scowl on her face, looking around, crashing through the area. She started at Kaliyagat and started working her way towards Keshigat, looking and looking. So this messenger quickly ran back to inform Radha and Krishna of this very awkward circumstance that's about to happen. Katila is coming. But when she came into the area where Radha and Krishna were seated, they were enjoying such nice pastimes. She didn't want to bring bad news. So she spoke just appreciation of the happiness they were experiencing and how wonderful it is that they're enjoying their activities together, and spoke very nicely like that. But then she blurted it out, but alas, alas, horrible news. Katila is headed right in this direction. And all the gopis, what to do? Here comes Katila. And Krishna said, don't worry, everything will be all right. I'm going to go find Vrindadevi and we'll make some very nice arrangement, you'll see. Now, Vrindadevi, as we heard yesterday about the beggar, remember that painting of Krishna coming as a mendicant beggar? Vrindadevi is very expert at supplying costumes for one of her services. She has a whole array of different costumes. So Krishna doesn't need costumes because he can manifest himself in identical forms of all the calves and cowherd boys. But he gives some service to some of his devotees. Sometimes he goes to Vrinda for a costume. So he went to Vrinda for an Abhimanyu costume. And Vrinda set him up, and Krishna knew how to make his voice sound just like Abhimanyu's. And Krishna went right away in the direction where this messenger said Katila was coming from. And he saw Katila, and he approached her and said, oh, my dear sister, what brings you to Vrindavan at this early hour of the morning? You have some religious activity to perform. I was looking for one of my calves that got lost from the herd and wandering here and there. I still haven't found him, and I don't know what to do. That was like why Abhimanyu's there. Katila said, well, I have some very important news for you to hear, but it's not pleasant news, so be careful. Listen very carefully. Radha and Krishna are somewhere here in this area saying one thing, saying they're doing religious activity, but who knows what mischief they're up to. And this is your dear wife. This debauchee Krishna is causing so much trouble in our family. So I want to catch them. And Abhimanyu said, very good. You're very dedicated. One is so fortunate to have such a qualified sister as you. I think I'm going to go right away to King Kamsa and report this to King Kamsa and insist that he takes action and checks Nandarama Maharaj and his terrible son Nandanandana polluting all of our young girls here in Braja. But I'll just wait here. You go ahead and do your research, your intelligence work, and you come back and report what you've found. So Katila's feeling really empowered and supported, and so she goes looking and looking and looking, and finally in a distance she sees a gathering of gopis. Aha! And one of the gopis comes forward and said, oh, Katila, how nice to see you. What great fortune has brought you here this auspicious day in the month of Magh by the side of the river Jamuna. She said, don't give me this religious talk. I know what you people are up to. Katila, what are you speaking about? I can tell from the scent in the air that Nandanandana is nearby. His whole body has this special fragrance just like musk, and it's thick in the air, so surely he's in this area. And if you're here, then Radharani is here. I want to find them. And they said, well, please feel free to look wherever you like. is there any way we can assist you? He said, that grove over there has a door. Open the door. I said, oh, Katila, that's a door that was made by the demigods. And they've locked the door. What religious girl could interfere with the arrangements of the demigods? Certainly, we wouldn't advise you to do that. He said, don't give me this religious talk. I'm going in and seeing. So she kicked the door, and when she went inside, she saw a garland lying on a cloth and the string of pearl necklace that was broken. This is Radharani's necklace, and this is Krishna's garland. Aha! Now I have evidence. And she grabbed them. Said, I'm going to take this to my brother, and he's going to take it to King Kamsa, and you are going to get yours. You're in big trouble. Radharani heard all this, and she came storming out and said, oh, my dear sister-in-law, I heard what you said, and I tell you, you don't know what you're talking about. You're a mad woman. You can say whatever you want to say. I have this necklace and I have this garland. I know what's going on. Okay, I invite you. You take the necklace and the garland to every single house in Braja, and I'll just laugh. Because I'm telling you now, it's not my necklace. And it's not Krishna's garland. So go right ahead. Make a fool of yourself. And all the gopis were surrounded around Katila, and she was thinking, uh-oh, these women, they're very strong and they're very fierce. I better get out of here quickly before some danger happens. So you'll see, you'll see. And she left and went to where Abhimanyu was waiting. But it was actually Krishna in disguise of Abhimanyu. Very complex, huh? So, oh, my dear sister, what is the good news? Not good news, brother. I found, see this necklace and see this garland. Radha and Krishna were here. For sure, now we have hard evidence. Oh, this is, you're very good at gathering information. I'm going to take this immediately to my dear friend Govardhan Mala, because we don't want a bad reputation to come to our family's name. So I'll tell him, this is the garland of Krishna and the necklace of Chandravali. And he has a good relationship with Kamsa. So he'll take it to Kamsa and tell Kamsa. He's got to do something. And when Krishna, Kamsa comes, they'll get punished. You've done very good work. Go quickly back to the house and tell Jatila everything is taken care of very nicely. You've done a very good job. So she left, thinking, okay, he's going to take care of everything. And Krishna went back to the Kunj and said, okay, everyone can just go back to their homes. Everything is all taken care of now. So Radharani went back to Yavat, and all the gopis went back to their places. Krishna spent a few hours just doing his pastimes, and then still in his Abhimanyu costume, he went to his home. And when he reached his home, he approached his mother-in-law, well, his mother and sister, Jatila and Katila, and said, I've been to Kamsa's home, and Kamsa's palace, and he's coming with 100 military men and 10 men on horses, and they're going to punish this Nanda Nandana and Nanda Maharaj. But while I was coming, I saw Krishna has come as a disguise. He's coming as if he's me. So I'm going to go inside and protect Radharani, so she's okay. But you stand up here on the gate. You take big mud balls and don't let him inside. Let him have it. So they thought, oh, our son is very clever. So they got big mud balls and stood up on the gate canopy over the gate, and Abhimanyu came home. He said, I've come home, my dear mother, my dear sister, what are you doing up there? I've come home to get some more money to buy some more cows. I didn't have enough money with me. Don't give us this you came back for some reason like that. Get out of here. And they threw their mud balls at him. He said, my dear sister, my dear mother, what are you doing? Have you gone crazy? Don't call us crazy. We know exactly what you're up to. You nonsense rascal, get out. And threw more mud balls. And Abhimanyu thought, my dear mother, she's gone crazy. I better go get an exorcist and have him extract this ghost that's inhabiting her. And that's how the story ends. Doesn't say what happened next. Meanwhile, Krishna, in the disguise of Abhimanyu, is in Radharani's room enjoying pastimes together. All of these, and so many of the other pastimes of Radha and Krishna, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, and our other acharyas describe, in addition to what we find in Srimad Bhagavatam. There, it's simply Krishna enjoying with his own internal potency, like it's described very carefully in the those 29, 30, 31, 32 chapters from the 10th canto. Our acharyas over and over again make this point that Krishna is enjoying with his own internal potency, which is altogether a different situation for us, or than us. Because we desire to enjoy, it's something outside of ourselves. We want a friend, or we want a husband or wife, or we want something to eat, or we want something to see, or something to hear, something that brings us happiness. It's something outside of ourselves. But for Krishna, there's nothing outside of himself. It's his own internal potency. And that's exactly how that chapter 29 begins. Krishna desired, his desire for amorous pastimes awakened, and he called upon his yogamaya potency to make all these arrangements. It's just Krishna and Krishna's potency. And now in our case, it's not us and our potency. That's the point. And so we can't apply the same measures or view the pastimes of Krishna the same way we would view if someone not Krishna would do such things. It's bad. But when Krishna does, it's transcendental enjoyment. Very important understanding. Simple, but very important understanding. So, back to just finishing our visit to Radhakund. Again, this is a painting taken from Lalita Kund, where Radha and Krishna enjoy their water pastimes. Similarly, we can assume that either in Radhakund or Shambhakund, similar pastimes took place. And as Radharani, by her bathing at Radhakund, invested her divine transcendental love for Krishna, those who take some association and render some service in these places, they're getting Radharani's association directly. And for these reasons, Rupa Goswami describes Radhakund as the most sacred place in the universe. And that's the last slide. Wow, we're done. That's his phrase. One should serve this divine Radhakund. Just like we serve Krishna, or we serve Radha and Krishna. Serving the divine Kund is not different than serving Radha and Krishna. And it's you feel it. It's like circumambulating Govardhan Hill. It's not just, you know, the pain in your feet from walking around Govardhan Hill. It's described when you circumambulate Govardhan Hill. Govardhan is looking, and he's wanting to know, what is your desire? And Govardhan fulfills desires. So spiritual desires should be our desires when we go to such places, Vrindavan and the holy land of Krishna, to increase our attachment for Krishna and our appreciation for him and our love for him. Hare Krishna. any questions about any of what we've been doing the last few couple of days since Friday? There's one that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes I like very much. After many, many exchanges with Krishna, Radharani starts to become overwhelmed with a certain mood. And the mood is, my beloved Krishna is being criticized. And it pained me too much that Krishna is being criticized as this and that, bad things. So she became so absorbed in that meditation, she felt unconscious. And she was in her room, unconscious. And Jatila came to see Radharani. She saw her lying there. She thought maybe she was asleep. She went and held her hand, and she felt nothing. She saw that she wasn't breathing. And so she panicked. And she went and called for a doctor. And the doctors came, and they had no idea what was wrong with Radharani. So Jatila thought, Mother Jasoda, she's the queen. Nanda Maharaj is the king. Maybe they know some special physician who can save the life of Radharani, because she had also a fever. So Krishna, being omniscient, he knew what was troubling Radharani, so he assumed a physician disguise. And when the messenger from Jatila's home reached Mother Jasoda's home, Mother Jasoda immediately began looking to see where is the proper doctor to help my beloved Radharani in this difficult circumstance. And she saw one physician and said, my dear physician, there's an emergency. Do you know how to cure someone who has very, very severe fever, and it hardly looks as if even they're breathing? He said, oh, no difficulty. Take me to the place. I'll see what I can do. And when he examined Radharani, he came out of her room and said, this is a very, very serious case, but I know the cure. And I'm going to need certain paraphernalia. And you please, here's a list of the paraphernalia that I need. And especially important is a bucket of Jamuna water. But it's a very special bucket of Jamuna water. You have to bring the Jamuna water here in a bucket that has 100 holes. So, yes, we'll get all the paraphernalia, and someone go quickly to the Jamuna and take the bucket and bring back the bucket with Jamuna water. So those who went, as they lifted the bucket out of the Jamuna River, all the water drained out because it had 100 holes. So they came back to the physician and said, what to do? All the water drained out. Said, well, let me do some calculation. He calculated, saying, well, it'll be possible if the person who brings the water is absolutely chaste. And according to my calculations, Jatila and Katila are the best. There's no one more chaste than they. Oh, please make the arrangement. So when Jatila, Katila heard the calculation of the astrologer, they thought, oh, he's a really good astrologer. He knows that we're perfectly chaste. So we'll go quickly to save the life of Radharani. And when they went to Jamuna, Jatila said, Katila, you go first. And when Katila lifted the bucket, with great horror, she saw the water leaking out. She was very embarrassed. What does this mean? I know that I'm chaste. What's wrong? What happened? So Jatila said, don't worry, I'll get the water. And she put the bucket into the Jamuna, and she lifted the bucket, and all the water leaked out. No, what's going wrong? I know perfectly well that you're perfectly chaste, and I'm perfectly chaste, and now what are people going to say about us? You know how things are in a village. People will say all kinds of bad things, and so what to do? They went back to the physician, and the physician said, I don't know what happened. Let me make my calculations again. He said, well, although she's the patient, my calculations say also equally qualified is Radharani herself. So if she could somehow make it to the Jamuna and bring back the water, then we could cure her. So she was approached, and even explaining to her, Radharani got out of her bed as if, you know, like someone rising from the dead, and took the bucket, went to the river Jamuna, and picked up the bucket, and all the water stayed in the bucket. And she brought the bucket back and gave it to the physician, who then cured Radharani of her fever. And so Jatila Katila said, well, now we know Radharani is perfectly chaste. We'll never speak of her in this way again, as if she's doing something bad. And so that's one of a number of pastimes where the position of correcting Radharani for her attraction for Krishna was transcendentally arranged. There's another one that's connected to Govardhan Hill. Similar. I mean, there's some parts of it that are similar. These are just pastimes. So Krishna arranges pastimes for his own purposes. When you're going around Govardhan Hill, along the eastern side, away from Govardhan Hill, or to the left as you're going around the hill, there's a place called Gauri Kund. And Gauri Kund is very inconspicuous. It's just a pond. Many times there's water buffalo and other animals in the pond. It just looks like any other place in Vrindavan. But it's a special place where there was, during Krishna's time, there was a Gauri temple. Gauri is like we were discussing Parvati or the wife of Lord Shiva, Gauri. So this pastime begins with Abhimanyu consulting with Jatila Katila and saying, you know, our good name of our family is being spoiled by this debauchee Krishna, and we don't doubt that the good quality of my wife and your daughter and sister. But this Krishna, he's so troublesome and disturbing. I would like to move the family residence from Vrindavan to Mathura so he won't interfere anymore. And Jatila said, this is a very good idea. We're fed up with this Nanda Nandana. You go ask Purnamasi, and if she gives her blessings, we'll go. So they went to Purnamasi, or he went to Purnamasi. And Purnamasi said, Abhimanyu, in villages people talk all the time. People can say anything about anything. So don't let rumors disturb your mind. But if you find something where there's genuine factual information, then you bring that to me and we'll deal with it. So he felt, okay, I won't leave, but I'm going to catch Radha and Krishna in the act of misbehaving together. So then he asked Purnamasi, well, I have another idea. Yes, what is that? My other idea is, my dear friend Govardhan Mala, he's become rich. And he's, Abhimanyu is a Vaishya, and he likes money. Vaishyas sometimes like money. So Abhimanyu said, I have an idea that my wife, Radha, can begin worship of Gauri like Chandravali does. And as Govardhan Mala has now become rich, I think I can become rich. Is this okay? And Purnamasi said, very good idea. Very good idea. Just do that. Forget this idea of leaving for Mathura. So he felt very encouraged by Purnamasi. He went back and indicated to his wife, so-called wife, Radharani, that she could begin worshipping very nicely every day Gauri. So she made her way, Radharani made her way to the Gauri temple. Meanwhile, Krishna's parrot found out that where Radharani was headed. He flew to Krishna, informed Krishna where Radharani was going. So Krishna intercepted Radharani before she got to the Gauri Kund. She was gathering flowers for her worship of Gauri, and Krishna came and checked her hand, told her, you can't pick flowers here. I'm the gardener of the king, and you can't pick any flowers here. I said, what are you talking about, you gardener of the king? The whole of Vrindavan belongs to Vrindadevi. This is Vrindavan. It's her property. And whatever your idea is, you can just leave me alone. And some quarrel started back and forth. And finally Radharani just left and went to the Gauri temple. Meanwhile, Abhimanyu heard that Krishna and Radha are over at the Gauri temple enjoying in an improper way together. Let's go. And Jatila said, yes, let's go. And Jatila said, let's go. Let's catch him in the act. And then we'll take this information to Purnamasi and she'll solve the problem. So Abhimanyu, in an angry mood, headed for Gauri temple. Meanwhile, Krishna found Vrindadevi and asked for a Gauri costume. So she dressed him up in a Gauri costume, and Krishna stood directly in front of the Gauri deity. Like, there's the deity, and there's Krishna in his Gauri costume, looking like the Gauri deity, exactly looking like the Gauri deity. And Abhimanyu then arrived on the scene. And when he was there, Vrinda was also there, and Lalita was there, and Vishakha was there. And he said, there's so many gopis, I know that Radharani is here. I want to know if Krishna's here. So he went inside the temple, and he was very happy to see that Radharani was alone with her friends worshipping Gauri. And one of Radharani's friends said, Radharani is offering prayers to Gauri. Very, very serious prayers. Oh, please tell me, what are those prayers? And Radharani's girlfriend said, I can't tell you, it's too terrible. No, 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 tell me. A great calamity is going to come to you and your family. What is that? What is that? Too terrible to tell. So he went to the Gauri deity and said, you tell me, what is it? What is it? No, no, I can't tell. Very, very bad. Vrinda knows, maybe she'll tell you. And Vrinda said, well, these things we normally aren't supposed to say, but just for your own protection, because you're the good husband of Radharani, I must tell you, Gauri informed us that in 2 days, King Kamsa is going to come with an army, arrest you, and cut off your head. No. He's going to cut off my head. What to do? Gauri, please help me. And then Jatila and Katila also started petitioning. Said, because Radharani is so ardent in her worship of Gauri, the deity has stepped out and is personified standing before us all. So, Gauri, please do something. Protect Abhimanyu. He's my dear son. And I wouldn't be able to bear living without him. Please make some arrangement. And Gauri then said to Jatila, well, normally I'm not interested even in the petitions of yogis and great ascetics and persons who worship me with great opulence. But I can say that this chaste woman, Radharani, because of her quality of chastity, for which I'm also known, I'm very, very much pleased. And she was petitioning me on your behalf to rescue me, to rescue you. So I can do something. But I have one condition. Yes, yes. What is that one condition? Radharani should come and worship me every day because her worship is so pure and she's such a chaste personality. Yes, yes. Radharani can come and worship you every day. Very, very nice. I agree to that arrangement. And I promise you, I'll never take Radharani from Vrindavan. She can stay here always and worship you. And then Lalita stepped forward and said, you know, Abhimanyu, when you falsely accuse someone of some wrongdoing, and it's not true, then that reaction for that wrongdoing goes to you. So never again consider, you heard what Gauri said, the most perfectly chaste of all personalities, never again consider your wife as acting improperly. Oh yes, I understand now. My mistake. This is why I'm getting this big reaction for offending my good wife, Radharani. I'll never speak like this ever again. So that pastime, I think that's also in a writing by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, but it may be one of our other acharyas. All of these things are just enhancements of the loving exchange of Radha and Krishna. And the attractiveness of Krishna's form and Radharani's form are perfectly fitting with the attractiveness of their loving pastimes. And the process of realizing these pastimes, of course, they're not revealed in Srimad Bhagavatam. They're revealed by devotees imbued with pure love. And in being imbued with pure love, they can see Krishna and they can see his pastimes. And by hearing them in the proper way, especially hearing them in a nice place like Vrindavan, transcendental place like Vrindavan, it enriches the appreciation even more. That's a plug to go visit Vrindavan when the opportunity arises. And when you go, please go with somebody who understands Vrindavan and understands the pastimes of the places that you visit, and hear nicely, not just go and take bath in the Jamuna and see things and take pictures, but hear the katha about the personality of Godhead and his loving associates performed in Vrindavan. Hare Krishna. Sri Prabhupada ki, Sri Vrindavan Dham ki. Yes.
Radha Kunj, Shama Kunj, Ki.